Today is Friday, March 12th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden outlines new COVID plans in primetime address.
We all lost something, a collective suffering, a collective sacrifice, a year filled with the loss of life.
Also, U.S. calls for investigation into human rights abuses in Tigray.
Thousands of people have been internally displaced, sought refuge in neighboring countries, and killed.
Plus, U.S. adds Islamic State groups in the DRC and Mozambique to terror watch list. These stories and more are next. In his first primetime address Thursday night, President Joe Biden marked 1 year since widespread pandemic shutdowns began across the United States and asked Americans to help with the challenges ahead. White House correspondent Patsy Widas-Kuwara has this story.
It has been a year since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 as a global pandemic. Since then, more than 2.6 million people have died around the world, 530,000 of them in the United States.
We all lost something, a collective suffering, a collective sacrifice, a year filled with the loss of life and the loss of living for all of us.
In his first primetime address Thursday, on the 50th day of his term, President Joe Biden outlined the steps his administration is taking to defeat the virus, including exceeding his own target of 100 vaccine shots in his first 100 days.
We're actually on track to reach this goal of 100 million shots in arms on my 60th day in office. No other country in the world has done this.
Biden said he is directing all states to make all American adults eligible to get the vaccine by the 1st of May. But he is facing a number of challenges, including vaccine hesitancy among some Americans and state governments ignoring federal health protocol guidelines, including Texas, which recently lifted its mask mandate.
A mask, the easiest thing to do to save lives. Sometimes it divides us. States pitted against one another instead of working with each other.
Analysts say divided views on vaccines and health protocols have been caused by politicization, particularly during the early days of the pandemic. Catherine Baker is dean at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago.
People have been getting such mixed messages about public health, and the climate has been so polarized that there is a really distressing lack of public faith in science, in public health messaging. It's really understandable given the mixed messages that people have heard, but I think it's one of the lasting harms that's been done.
Earlier Thursday, Biden signed a $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief bill into law. The stimulus package was passed by Congress without Republican support. Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
This isn't a rescue bill. It isn't a relief bill. It's a laundry list of left-wing priorities that predate the pandemic.
Biden will travel the country next week to tout the law bringing COVID-19 relief in what his administration calls the Help Is Here tour. Patsy Widas-Kuwara, VOA News.
The United States on Thursday condemned Chinese moves to change Hong Kong's electoral system and forecast difficult talks with Beijing's top diplomats next week when the U.S. side plans to raise what Washington calls a genocide that China is committing against minority Muslims. White House spokesman Jen Psaki said Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan would not hold back when they meet with Chinese diplomats in Alaska on March 18th and 19th, whether it's on Taiwan or efforts to push back democracy in Hong Kong or on concerns we have about the economic relationship.
I would expect, obviously, that this meeting next week, we felt it was important to have it on U.S. soil. We certainly anticipate that National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and Secretary of State Tony Blinken will be discussing both the challenges we've had and not holding back on issues and concerns we have with the behavior of Chinese leadership, whether it's on Taiwan or recent efforts to push back democracy in Hong Kong, or on concerns we have about the economic relationship. So they will certainly raise those issues and the lack of transparency as it relates to COVID, human rights abuses as well. But they'll also talk about areas of opportunity and ways we can work together. We certainly will not, they will not be holding back in the conversation, but it's an important moment next week to engage directly and in person. And I know they're looking forward to it. We'll have a robust readout, I'm sure, when that meeting concludes.
A Chinese official has hit back at U.S. criticism of election law changes in Hong Kong, noting that chaos surrounding the recent American presidential election. The deputy director of the Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office was reacting to a statement by U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, who condemned what he called China's continuing assault on democratic institutions in Hong Kong. It followed Thursday's approval by China's legislature of a plan to increase Beijing's control of how Hong Kong's legislature is chosen. The revision affects the number of directly elected lawmakers. The Chinese official likened the changes to Hong Kong's electoral system as a minimally invasive surgery that will restore health to the city. Britain is preparing for tens of thousands of Hong Kong citizens to apply for special visas to settle in the UK after the government launched a new plan offering fast-track citizenship to residents of the former British colony. Beijing has denounced Britain's move, which was in response to China's crackdown on basic freedoms. VOA's Henry Ridgewell spoke to one pro-democracy activist in London who was forced to flee Hong Kong and is now applying to settle in Britain.
Finn Lau is building a new life in Britain, but he's still fighting for Hong Kong's freedom. As a student in 2014, he was a key player in the so-called umbrella pro-democracy protests. A new job took him to Britain in 2019, just before protests broke out again in Hong Kong against China's extradition bill. Lau watched as the protests grew into a wider pro-democracy movement.
I did go back to Hong Kong in late December 2019 because I want to participate, I want to witness the street, the protests in Hong Kong. But then I was unfortunate to be arrested along with a few hundred others on the first day of 2020.
Lau was lucky. The police failed to identify him as a protest ringleader, and he was released.
So I just immediately fly back to the UK 1 or 2 days later after the arrest. And on the plane, the feeling was surreal, I would say, because I, at that time, I know that this may be the last time that I could step on the soil of Hong Kong.
A few months after arriving safely back in Britain, Lau was attacked on the street.
So back in April 2020, there was a rumour that there has been a £10,000 bounty on my life, on my head. And then 2 months later, when I was walking in a normally safe neighbourhood, I was suddenly ambushed or attacked by unknown street gangs. They didn't take away any of my personal belongings. They didn't say a word.
British police failed to identify his assailants. In June, Beijing imposed a national security law on Hong Kong. Britain says the crackdown breaches the handover agreement signed in 1997, which China denies. In response, Britain recently launched a new visa scheme for Hong Kong residents holding British Nationals Overseas or BNO passports, which were offered before Britain's handover of the territory. The visas offer the ability to work and study and fast-tracked British citizenship. Lau has just submitted his application.
Some people may think that BNO scheme is not a direct tool that could leverage against the CCP because the CCP won't be hurt by the BNO scheme. But on the other hand, some people may think that this offers a kind of lifeboat to Hong Kongers.
While grateful, Lau and other Hong Kong exiles want Britain to do more.
We just think that maybe some more actions could be carried out by the UK government. For example, maybe some sort of Magnitsky-style sanction, which could free, under which the assets of some Hong Kong government officials like Carrie Lam could be freed by the UK government.
Britain says it is considering such sanctions. Meanwhile, Lau and other exiles continue fighting for Hong Kong's freedom. helped by the lifeline offered by a British BNO visa. But even on the streets of London, Lau says he does not feel safe from the long arm of China's Communist Party. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The White House is calling for a full independent investigation into human rights abuses in the conflict in Ethiopia's Tigray region. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports on the ongoing violence in Tigray that has left 3 million people in need of food assistance.
In Ethiopia's mountainous Tigray region, federal troops have been fighting forces of the region's former ruling party, the Tigray People's Liberation Front, in the north since last November. Thousands of people have been internally displaced, sought refuge in neighboring countries, and killed. A recent Amnesty International report concluded that Eritrean soldiers killed hundreds of civilians in Ethiopia's ancient town of Aksum in November in what the rights group called a massacre. Another rights group, Human Rights Watch, later corroborated the mass killings of civilians with additional reporting and research. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told VOA the United States wants a full and independent investigation into human rights abuses in the Tigray region.
So the president is deeply concerned, highly engaged on this issue.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken told a congressional panel Wednesday the situation in Tigray is unacceptable and must change.
We have, as you know, forces from Eritrea that are there, and we have forces from an adjoining region, Amhara, that are there. They need to come out, and a force that will not abuse the human rights of the people of Tigray or commit acts of ethnic cleansing, which we've seen in western Tigray, that has to stop.
The United Nations says 3 million Tigrayans are now dependent on food assistance because the conflict interrupted the harvest. Rights groups say humanitarian access to rural parts of the Tigray region has been limited. But the Ethiopian government argues that access is a sovereignty and a security issue, and UN teams are not free to go wherever they please.
This country is not no man's land. It has a government. It only has difficulty in the north. So they were told in some of areas they were not supposed to move. But they indulge themselves to kind of adventurous expedition.
The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, said the hunger crisis is man-made, adding she used that gender designation deliberately.
We call on all sides, and I stress all sides, to stop the fighting and allow this man-made humanitarian situation to be addressed.
Secretary Blinken said Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed was an inspiring leader who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. But now he needs to step up to make sure his own people who are suffering are getting the protection they need and deserve. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
A United Nations investigator is accusing Myanmar's military junta of likely crimes against humanity and is urging international coordinated action to isolate and get rid of the military government. The report is under review by the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
United Nations Special Rapporteur Thomas Andrews says that since Myanmar's military seized power from the elected government February 1st, security forces have murdered at least 70 people and arbitrarily arrested more than 2,000. He says there is video evidence of security forces viciously beating protesters, destroying property, looting shops, and firing indiscriminately into people's homes. He says the junta has been systematically destroying legal protections and crushing freedom of expression and assembly. Andrews notes the current leadership of what he calls a murderous illegal regime is facing charges of genocide before the International Court of Justice. The military is accused of human rights abuses committed in Rakhine State against the mainly Muslim Rohingya minority.
It should come as little surprise that there is growing evidence that this same Myanmar military, led by the same senior leadership, is now engaging in crimes against humanity, including the acts of murder, enforced disappearance, persecution, torture, and imprisonment in violation of fundamental rules of international law.
Andrews says there's growing evidence that these acts of cruelty are part of a coordinated, systematic campaign rather than a series of isolated events. He is calling on other countries to take strong, coordinated action to stop these atrocities.
Stop the flow of revenue into the illegal junta's coffers. This can happen now. Multilateral sanctions should be imposed on both senior junta leaders and their major sources of revenue, including military-owned and controlled enterprises, and Myanmar oil and gas enterprise.
He notes Myanmar's natural gas projects will generate an estimated $1 billion in revenue this year. Without sanctions, he warns, the military junta will be able to use these funds to support its criminal enterprise and attack innocent people. Permanent Secretary of Myanmar's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Chan A, says the Tatmadaw, as the military is also called, did not want to stall the nascent democratic transition in the country. However, he says it had no choice, given what he described as last November's fraudulent general election. The fraud allegations have been denied by Myanmar's Electoral Commission. He says the authorities have been exercising utmost restraint in dealing with violent protests. He says his government is committed to restore and maintain the democratic transition in accordance with the existing state constitution. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In a statement to the UN-backed Human Rights Council, Myanmar's Foreign Ministry's Permanent Secretary, Chan Aye, says his country's military leaders are dealing with, quote, extremely complex challenges, unquote, and a, quote, delicate situation, unquote.
Authorities' concern have been paying attention to maintaining law and order in the country. Authorities have been exercising utmost restraint to deal with the violent protests.
That's Myanmar's Foreign Ministry Permanent Secretary, Chan Aye. Thousands of Rohingya refugees live in temporary camps in India's northwestern Jammu and Kashmir region, where they fear deportation back to Myanmar. VOA's Urdu service Zubair Dar visited a camp of people in Bathindi Navar who said they fled abuses and do not want to go back. Roshan Nozai narrated this story.
More than 5,000 Rohingya refugees who fled violence in Myanmar, now called this makeshift refugee camp, home.
We have watched on the news that some say that we have to be driven out of here, but no one has come here to tell us to leave.
Activists say India's Hindu nationalists have stoked fears about the Rohingya, calling them a security risk in a region that borders long-time rival Pakistan and has significant numbers of Indian Muslims.
Jammu is located in a very sensitive area. Besides being near to the border, it has a heterogeneous population. Their presence in Jammu, I would consider, is a ticking bomb that can explode anytime. Therefore, they have to be evicted from Jammu, particularly from this place.
Last week, Indian police reportedly detained more than 150 Rohingya from the region to extradite them to Myanmar, where they worry they will be subject to more violence by the Burmese military.
We do not expect anything good from them because they killed our parents. They massacred our brothers and sisters. They destroyed our children. They have committed a genocide against Rohingyas that has no precedent in the history of the world.
Observers estimate that overall, there are approximately 40,000 Rohingya refugees living in India. Rights groups have called on the Indian government to halt deportations and protect those in need of refuge. For Zubair Dar, in Jammu, India, Roshan Nurzai, VOA News.
This is the Voice of America. Two German states choose new legislatures on Sunday, the first major test during a year in which a national election will determine who succeeds Chancellor Angela Merkel. King Goodwill Zwelithini, the traditional leader of South Africa's Zulu Nation, has died aged 72 after being hospitalized for more than a month. His family announced the death. Zwelithini, the eighth Zulu king, reigned for more than 50 years, making him the longest-serving Zulu monarch. The Director General of the International Committee of the Red Cross calls South Sudan, quote, a forgotten conflict, unquote, facing a humanitarian crisis. The UN chief warns that 60% of the population of the world's newest nation are increasingly hungry. The head of the World Food Program says there are famine-like conditions in the country's western Pibo County, where the situation is desperate. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Islamic State-linked groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Mozambique are the newest entries on the United States' list of foreign terrorist groups. This week, U.S. officials talked about how these groups started and why they deserve this designation. Anita Powell files from Johannesburg.
There is a specter haunting Africa. Specter of terrorism. So say top American counterterrorism officials, who say they're doing everything they can to exercise this violent threat, which directly impacts the safety and stability of U.S. partner nations like the Democratic Republic of Congo and Mozambique. This week, the State Department drew a line in the sand by designating two African groups, the Islamic State affiliate in Congo and the branch in Mozambique, as foreign terrorist organizations. The group in eastern Congo has been responsible for a series of attacks that killed at least 849 civilians last year, according to United Nations reports. Mozambican group is responsible for thousands of civilian deaths through a series of large-scale attacks in the country's north that has displaced nearly 670,000 people. A designation is more than just a label, says John Godfrey, acting coordinator for counterterrorism and acting special envoy for the Global Coalition to Defeat the Islamic State. He spoke to journalists Thursday via teleconference from Washington.
Among other consequences of those designations, any property or interests in property of those designated and subject to U.S. jurisdiction are blocked, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in any transactions with them. It is a crime to knowingly provide material support or resources to ISIS in the Democratic Republic of the Congo or to ISIS in Mozambique or to attempt or conspire to do so. Designations are one of the most important tools we have to disrupt the financial and other support networks that terrorist groups need to export violence and carry out attacks.
Godfrey declined to say why American officials are so sure that these African groups are tied to the Islamic State, saying the information is classified. But he said the evidence of ties between the IS in Mozambique and the main IS core in Iraq and Syria is quite incontrovertible. And in Congo, he said the U.S. is quite confident of a link to Islamic State headquarters. Michael Gonzalez, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Bureau of African Affairs, said the U.S. fights terrorism in a variety of ways and described how they do so in Congo.
We do support the FARDC in terms of their efforts against violent extremists, with particularly four lines of effort, bolstering civil military operations and capabilities, military engineering, strategic communications, and English language laboratories, with the goal of empowering civilian leadership to promote structural reform and professionalization of the military. I think these are prime examples of how the United States is really running with the vision of the Biden administration and the statements of Secretary Blinken about emphasizing our partnerships with African partners and building local capacity, because it's through that local capacity that there will be sustainable gains that are able to be realized through the future.
So how long will it take to vanquish these two new groups, which only started to show their mettle in the past 3 years? That officials did not say. Some groups on the U.S. list of terror organizations, like Al-Qaeda, have stayed there since the late 1990s, meaning they remain active more than 20 years after the U.S. deemed them a threat. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.